Dr. Amalia Gonyas-Malka, welcome to Womanity, Woman in Unity, the show that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggles for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, democracy, racism, socioeconomic class division, and gender-based violence. Joining us in studio today is Louise Carver, renowned South African singer and songwriter, who has produced numerous hit records and earned several South African Music Award nominations, such as Best Female Artist, Best Adult Contemporary Album, Record of the Year, Song of the Year, and Remix of the Year. Welcome to the show.
It's lovely to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you here. Along the years, you have become a role model for many youngsters who have grown up listening to your music. Can you please share with us a few of the landmarks in your career?
Well, I was signed to my first record label when I was 15 years old, and my life changed from there. We worked very hard after school. My mother would take me to different venues with the record label to see how I would handle performing live. And then at 17, when I was doing my matric year, I released my first single. I actually wasn't aware that the record label was releasing it, and friends started hearing it on various radio stations and telling me. My parents had made the decision not to tell me and to keep me focused on my last year at school. And I remember when it started to gain momentum, my mum took the, I think it was just before I got a cell phone, took the landline out, and I had to study for my Afrikaans book exam. Kringa in die bos. So it was a very, and from there, I had a number one single, and then we released my first album, and I was, yeah, I was no longer anonymous, and that was a big change for me. And I traveled to London and worked with some of the best dance DJs there, done a lot of genres. But a highlight for me I had a number one hit in Europe called Play the Game, and I performed in Antwerp in Belgium in an old Gothic church that was converted into a club, and I performed there with some of the best DJs in the world. And I was 23, I think. And then also supporting Michael Bublé when he came to South Africa was an amazing highlight. That was about 7 or 6 years ago, and I performed at Kersenbosch Gardens.
Again, totally different genres.
Different, just piano and voice in front of 7,000 people for 3 nights in a row. It's all about the song for me. I don't really mind what genre I put it into. It's a choice that I make and the mood that I'm in, really. It's all about the song. And then also being chosen as a 46664 ambassador and performing, I think it was 2009, for Nelson Mandela's 46664 show. And I performed alongside my heroes, Johnny Clegg, who I grew up with his music, and Annie Lennox and Peter Gabriel. And just sharing the stage with them and having my dressing room next door was one of those lovely perks.
They're definitely legends in the music industry.
Yeah, it was lovely. So those are the ones that stand out, but there's lots more lovely experiences.
And you'd mentioned that you signed your first record deal at 15, released the debut single at 17. That was with your first album, Mirrors and Windows, was another top 10 hit. And after school, and I think this is the challenge, you continued with your music as well as attending Cape Town University, where you received your honours degree in philosophy, politics, and economics. And I think that that's very impressive, especially with all of the fame that you had at such a young age, and you still put the accomplishment of your academic degree listed high on your agenda. Can you expand on your decision to carry on studying?
I have an amazing mum that really only values education. She doesn't put much weight in fame or external beauty. So I've had that I've had her as a wonderful guidance throughout my life. And humor, she also values humor. And I think you need to have a relative level of intelligence to be funny. So those are the things that I grew up with and put value in. And then the owner of my first record label, a guy called Bruce Kinnear, he was a top pathologist from Zimbabwe, and he came to South Africa and loved music and started the record label. And so he was very firm about me, about my music career not interrupting my academic career. So he gave me a lot of leeway. And I think anybody that's been to UCT or any university will vouch for the fact that you have a lot of free time as a student. And that's a wonderful time for people to discover themselves and go and party and get too drunk and do. I didn't have any of that. I didn't want it either, so it's not by force. When I was working at UCT, the record label gave me space. When UCT classes had finished, I needed to be in the studio, and that's the only place I wanted to be. So it was a good fit. I didn't fight with that.
Well, you seemed incredibly focused and single-minded in terms of what you were doing, and it sort of blocked out any other external distractions.
Didn't have any interest. I remember trying one day to hang out like a normal UCT student, and I went to my friend's place in Woodstock, and they were drinking some cheap wine, and they were hanging and talking stuff, and I just thought, oh, how long do I have to do this for? I'd rather just get back into studio and try something new with the band. So I knew that it wasn't like I gave up something. I had no interest in being a normal student.
And you had a very strong work ethic, I think, starting off at 15.
Yeah, it was a dream that always, it was something that I, a talent that I had since I was two and was told that I could sing very deep voice at two and pitch perfect. And then by five, I was on the piano. I couldn't get off, and violin. And by the time I started school, it was already, okay, put the school in the special choir. And I was a soloist. And I had opera training at 15. I started composing at 11. So it wasn't a big surprise for people that knew me. I wasn't good at sports. I had chronic asthma. Unfortunately, I still do. But, you know, I really should thank asthma because I couldn't waste my time on sports or anything. I found the thing that worked very well for me, and I loved it. Couldn't drag me off the piano.
I think it's wonderful that you found your niche so early in life. Often people struggle to find what it is that they want to achieve, what it is that they want to be, but you've identified your talents and you had them nurtured.
I did, yeah, and it wasn't even, it was just a vocation. It just felt so natural. When you're so little, you don't know why you're doing something. Why did I spend 8 hours on the piano in the lounge when everyone else is playing in the pool or, you know, going to movies? I just couldn't get off the piano. I was trying to perfect something. So I suppose it's like the IT guy that lives on the computer. It's the same feeling, except it's on a piano, not a computer.
You found your calling.
I did.
Based on that, what would be your advice to all the girls that want to follow in your footsteps and enter the music business? And do you think that there's a right age for it?
Unfortunately, there is. The younger the better, obviously with a lot of guidance and hopefully with some wonderful mentors like I had. I was very protected by my mother and the owner of the record label. So, yes, the earlier the better, because you have a massive learning curve and you're going to make lots of mistakes and you're going to bring out music that doesn't suit your image and no one's going to buy it. And you need a lot of time to get used to singing in a recording studio. And you need a lot of time to be performing live without being famous. So personally, the idols for me is completely the wrong way around. You've become famous before you've got the experience. And it's really the wrong way around.
I read an interesting extract from Malcolm Gladwell, 10,000 Hours.
Yeah,
and he spoke about the Beatles in Germany, how much airplay they got on stage, clocking up their 10,000 hours.
That's exactly right. And I didn't quite do that extent, but I had a lot of time to find myself on stage without having a camera or a TV crew around me or trying to look pretty. And you could just be a musician. And I think that's a very important time before you're ready to kind of be hatched into the public eye. Because once you're in, you're in. So the right time is obviously as soon as possible with the right mentors around you. And it really is not about fame. If you've got any, I had no desire to be famous. It was never part of I think luckily I grew up before reality TV and before the Kim Kardashians and the Paris Hiltons. And I just wanted to play. I just wanted to make beautiful music. I didn't think about money. I didn't think about fame. And I still don't care about those things. And you can't go into the music industry is incredibly hard, and they love you, and then they don't listen to you. You get critiqued on everything you do, and the highs are very high, and the lows are incredibly low. So if you don't have a thick skin, naturally, actually, it's not the right industry for you at all. And there's a lot of good singers out there, and there's a lot of pretty girls. It's really that's not even, that doesn't even get you in the starting block. And you need to be able to write your own music, because to make a proper living, you have to be a songwriter, unless you're in the States, where they don't really let you write your own songs. You've got about a 20 team around you, and I've worked in the States, so I know that. But yeah, I think in this country you need to write your own music, you need to do it for the love of it, and you need to naturally be not a sensitive person. And strangely, I've always been attracted to sensitive people. My sister is a highly sensitive person, and growing up with her as my older sister, I realized I'm not like that. I don't feel so wounded. And an example of which, we'd walk into a room and someone would look at us, and my sister would go, what's wrong with me? And I go, what's wrong with them? What's their problem? And that's a mark that you're okay with the music industry, when you go, what's wrong with them? What's up with them? When somebody critiques your work and goes, it's not great, you're like, you don't get it, shame. And you need that.
Looking at also from an introvert and an extrovert.
Yeah, and funny enough, I am an introvert. I'm sure there's lots of definitions, but I recharge my batteries completely on my own through reading, writing on the piano. I've started baking, which is weird, but it actually relaxes me. And whereas my boyfriend is the exact opposite. He's an extrovert, and he likes to go to the pub, talk to strangers, have a drink with his friends, and talk about nothing. And then he comes back all happy.
So
and
absorbing external energies, where you're looking at focusing and creating those internal energies.
For me, that's just centering myself again, but that's not for everyone. But I don't think two introverts make a great relationship. I think you need opposites, but you'd never leave the house.
We'll be right back after this.
Hi, my name is Yvonne Chaka-Chaka, an ambassador for the Nelson Mandela Children's Hospital. You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, a program against racism, socio-economic class division, and gender-based violence. Womanity, Women in Unity, presented by Dr. Amalia Malka, every week on this day at this time.
You're listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, on frequency 9625 kilohertz on the 31-meter band. Today, we're talking to Louise Carver, renowned South African singer and songwriter. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. Now, continuing with our discussion, one of the areas that I think is really important is about building female leadership capacity for the future of women in our country. And as a role model, how do you see female leadership in South Africa?
Well, where it's at the moment, it's only just beginning. I think we've got a very male-dominated society, and the culture isn't really supportive. But I hope that that's changing with people like Helen Ziller and Patricia DeLille. They're making a lot of headway, and they're not afraid to back down at all. So I think that's a good thing. And I can only speak from my own experience, which is the music industry, because it'd be silly to talk about politics. I know very little, even though I did get my degree in it, but it was quite a few years ago. My journey has been totally oblivious to men at all. I've just done what I've done, and I've always had great support. And there was only one experience that made me suddenly aware of a boys' club, and the fact that I was very much alone. Actually, there were two experiences. It was with a major record label.
Louise, was that on the management then, as opposed to working relationships?
It was on two fronts. It was on the production team that was working on my album. And then it was also on the record label front. And my third record was followed after a very successful second record called Silent Scream. And I remember we had just started working on it. I had presented 12 piano and voice songs. That's how I start. Everything starts on piano and voice. And then I choose the right producer. And the producer I'd chosen was a lovely guy, very, very famous in this country. And he had gone away for a wedding where all the music industry was at this wedding. I had chosen not to go for my own reasons, and my record was being spoken about. My record was just piano and voice. There wasn't a record. It was just basic songs that I had done. And for whatever reason, I was getting attacked and saying it wasn't going to be any good. That is like the artist has just picked up the paintbrush. And it was all of them, very powerful people at a wedding. And the only reason I know this is because it was the JMB Met in February, and some of the people there at the wedding had come to the JMB Met, and they were talking again about my album, which I hadn't even started. And a dear friend of mine called me, and he said, I think you need to know this, what's going on. And I had to deal with it head on for the first time, and I was nervous. I had to phone and figure out where the hell it was coming from. Making an album in itself is so hard. That then done, to market it and make people like it, is even harder. But to get out, you haven't even got out of the starting block, and someone's already bad-mouthing it. Anyway, I found the source, and the source was supposed to be on my team. And I should have, and this is a mistake that I made, and I should have demanded that this person left my area of work. I can't be more specific. It's not fair, because we had to work it through later and we made peace with it. But when somebody on your team is sabotaging you, whether they know it or not, happened to be a man, never do what I did, which is to let them stay, because I was too scared of because he was quite powerful. I was too scared of the repercussions within a major record label. And so I didn't do what I should have done, but that won't happen again. And then the funny thing was, I had my biggest hit off that album called Home, which was massive for me, followed by three other singles that were massive: Time is a Healer, Didn't Mean to Call, and I've just forgotten the very big one, and then a remix of Time is a Healer. And that's really put me up for, I think, about four different SAMA Awards, South African Music Awards. So it had no base. And then the album after that, I also got attacked, but both by the production team, and I suppose I didn't have the record label with me on that as well. And I wrote, and this is the wonderful thing about music, and the power of the pen or the power of your voice, is that after I had a particularly rough meeting with a boys' club, I went home and wrote my number one hit single, Warrior, featuring Zulu Boy. And that was all about, I mean, I know what you want, it's written on your face, you think you would be the first to try and manipulate me, push me to the floor, take away what I adore, well, the game has just begun, and I'll take what's mine. And that was how the song starts, and it's got a big African drum in there.
Very powerful.
Yeah, it was just like, I am not going to lie down and take this. And it was all about one person wanting more money and justifying it by saying, I'm difficult to work with. Firstly, what artist isn't that knows who they are and needs to? And I'm never difficult. I'm always fair. And I just have a strong vision of what I would like in studio. And I've never shouted or demanded or manipulated anybody in my life. I've always been very direct.
Well, for artists, it's a creative process. And it is, at the end of the day, individualistic.
Exactly. And it's my name on the album. And there's small print of the people involved. But no one cares about them. They care if your album is good enough to continue having a career. So it is fight or flight in this industry, and you can't back down. And that is why young women need to learn very early, and which was lacking in my education. It's lovely to be a lady, and it's very nice to have grace and charm. But that is not going to help your career survive. There's a time when you can play that role of being a lovely, charming woman and be a lovely, charming woman, but there's a time when you actually need to get your hands dirty and fight and not be charming so that a man can take away what should be yours. And that I had to learn on my own. There's no guidelines, and I wish that they would earlier in a woman's, a girl's life.
It's having the courage, being able to be assertive, and as you'd mentioned earlier, is having that thick-skinned element to your character in order to stand up for what's right and to not be afraid of backing down for yourself.
And not be called the B word because you're a woman. And I think it's more culturally acceptable in England and America and probably Canada to be strong woman. But in our country and in Africa, it's still seen as a negative thing for a woman to have a very strong opinion and be a strong leader. And it should be the norm, not an exception.
Well, I think it's by having positive imagery, having women like yourselves who are strong, who've defined their place, their position, and represented as role models for those younger women to look up to and aspire to be a leader, aspire to be, to walk in the footsteps that they want to walk in to achieve their careers.
That's nice. And never know your place, by the way.
Well, continuing with our focus on women's progress, our history has defined our present, and our actions in the present direct our future. In your opinion, which areas do you think women need to build on the most going forwards into the future?
I can only speak from my own experience of what I needed to work on. And having, obviously, confidence, I've got a lot of external confidence. I'm happiest on a stage in front of thousands of people. And that's really lovely. That's good for me. It is what I've been trained to do. So it's like a heart surgeon that suddenly can't operate. People always go, it's amazing that you can be on stage and not be nervous. Well, I equate it to, would you want your doctor to come and cut you up if he was nervous? He's trained. I've trained. There really isn't something to congratulate me about. I've trained since I was tiny for this. If I was nervous now, I'd be in the wrong career. So that's one aspect, to be confident when you're in a meeting and all those things. But that's you can get and you can practice. But I think the confidence inside, and to love who you are, and to not allow. I think for me, I've had troubled relationships with men in the past, and for a reason which I'm only now starting to discover through therapy, actually, is that although my external is very strong, my internal is not, has been kind of ignored through having to be so strong on the outside. And so you allow bad behavior, allow someone to speak badly to you, not necessarily in a work environment, but in a personal space. And you look at someone like Tina Turner, who is so brilliant on stage, and then you've got that
awesome woman,
you know, Ike, you know, effectively raping her and beating her up in the private space. And I think a lot of public people have very bad personal relationships, and because they've ignored the real person, the soul, because they've had to work so hard on the external person. So I think women really need to really work on loving themselves, because if you really love yourself, you're not going to let a man speak badly to you or touch you in an aggressive way. And I think verbal abuse is, I unfortunately experienced it, so it's it can break you down. So you really need to love yourself from as early as possible, or get help if you can go and get it to strengthen that side. Because if that's not strengthened, you're not going to have a full experience on this planet.
We'll be right back after this.
Hi, I'm Yvonne Chaka Chaka, the United Nations Goodwill Ambassador on Malaria in Africa. You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, a program against racism, socio-economic class division, and gender-based violence.
You're listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, on frequency 9625 kilohertz on the 31-meter band. Today, we're talking to Louise Carver, renowned South African singer and songwriter. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. In our previous discussion, we were talking about the need for people to find that balance, to understand themselves better, and how that is reflective in their work environment, in their home environment, and that it's a lifelong journey. Music has always been a huge inspiration to people, and occasionally has been exploited to influence political and social agendas around the world. How do you see the role of musicians in that regard? And do you think there's a fine line between what is a positive or negative influence on people's lives?
Well, what you said is exactly correct. And when you, music can drive someone to, my boyfriend runs a successful events company, eventing place in Newtown. And he showed me a YouTube clip of what he had taken and then put on YouTube of this heavy metal band that there was about 3,000 people at the show, and the fights that broke out, and they enjoyed it as well. It was these middle-aged men, bald heads, tattoos, listening to this heavy metal music and couldn't wait to get into a big fight. And so I think, you know, you can't always say music is like Marilyn Manson and heavy metal and hardcore gangster rap is bad. Yes, it's been proven to incite people. But sometimes it's quite good to put a whole bunch of testosterone crazy men into a room and let them punch it all out in the safety of this venue. And I couldn't believe it. The people are having a great time, bloody noses and everything. So it's a very bizarre thing that music has that power. And they got a positive experience out of that. I think they got their adrenaline out. They had a story to tell. No one that didn't want to get hurt got hurt. It was in an environment that was kind of closed off. I'm sure there's lots of negative stories about bad music. And I know, listening to rap, and I actually do enjoy rap, that sometimes you feel hardcore when you're in your car and you've got your... But it doesn't incite me to want to shoot someone or something. But I do see the... I can see how that would psych people up. But all I know is what I do. And my what I've been very clear about from a very early age is I'm very honest in my music. And I write about what I've felt and what made me happy and what made me very sad. And I wrote as if it was a diary, and then I crafted it into a song. So you can't just go bleh. It has to actually work as a song. And I've gained fans because it has a lot of weight and meaning. And I've always had great feedback saying I was going through a divorce, and your song Empty Fantasy got me through that. And that's all I really need. If I'm having an effect on people, and it's because I've been honest. And I couldn't survive without being honest. I could never write meaningless songs. I don't think I'm that good to write cheesy pop songs. I think I'm not. I can't write trash.
Well, I think you speak about a lot from an emotional element and also with a lot of authenticity in terms of the music that you write and your process and how you dig into yourself to bring out the lyrics and out the tune. Where you'd mentioned in terms of the emotional effects that music has had on individuals, whether it be the guys in their brawl with their Metallica.
Yeah.
But I also think that in terms of the content that music holds, its lyrics, its power, how it's influenced, whether we talk about it from a political point of view with the apartheid era, in terms of being able to inform the rest of the world of what was happening, or when we look at, and I regard that as a positive influence, or when we look at things from a negative point of view, where we have this whole image of the rock image of drugs and booze.
Yeah. No, something like Bright Blue Weeping was hugely powerful, with Nkosi Sikelele embedded in the track. And it's a great story for those that don't know it. I do a lovely cover of Weeping, and so does Josh Groban. And it was a song released in the 80s by Bright Blue. And they were a Cape Town band. And it shot up the charts on Radio 5. And this was obviously during the peak of the worst time of apartheid. Somebody at the radio station realized that Nkosi Sikelele was underneath, played strings in a lovely orchestral kind of part. And also the lyrics were metaphors for the apartheid government doing to its own people. And it was whipped off in the radio station very quickly and banned. And Bright Blue left the country and have all done very well in the States as writers and musicians. But that was a great story of how music had such an impact. And there's loads of others. So it does have that. And I've enjoyed so many of those songs. But I personally, that's not my bag. I like to just heal people through, if they're going through something terrible, I hope that my music can make them feel good, or feel in love, or just feel really. And it's the same as a romantic comedy. Like, why do we do it to ourselves if we're having a good old cry? It feels good sometimes to just have a release cry, and I know that I write release cry songs.
And now, turning away from your musical interests, you've been a youth ambassador for the Independent Electoral Committee in South Africa in 2009. And earlier you'd mentioned you were also part of the 4664 initiative as a youth ambassador for Nelson Mandela Trust. Are there any other social projects that you're involved with or trying to raise awareness of?
Yeah, I was involved in both of the Shout projects, and that is an amazing initiative by the musician Cabello and Danny Kay. And
can you just expand a bit more on what the initiative's about?
Well, it's about, we sang the song Shout, Shout, Let It All Out, and a whole bunch of us sang the song. And then you could download it on, I think it was Prime Media, Media 24, or one of the media stations. Just trying to think of the campaign, sorry. But you could download the song, and that money raised would then go to the police and also trauma therapy, any institution that was helping people get through either a traumatic experience brought on by crime, or I remember one of the funds that we'd raised went to buying the latest police vests, so bulletproof vests. So it was very much about trying to help the people that are trying to help us fight crime better. So I was very proud to be a part of that. And they brought out another song as well, We're the Voice. And I was a part of that. And then I'm the ambassador for SPCA, which I grew up with a house full of animals. And we always got Christmas cards from them. And they were very much a part of our life. And because I'm a bit of a loner, I take great comfort in my three little doggies that are at home, because you don't have to talk and they just understand you and they're just lovely. And so I think as a person that has some kind of influence and as a personality, it's important to join charities that you really have a massive love for and empathy for the cause, because it requires a lot of work and it's not paid, and so it takes you away from what you're doing, which is paying you. But so it doesn't really matter, because you're getting that lovely reward back of either feeding hungry animals or getting them vaccinated. Or so I'm part of the SPCA ambassadorship, and then various other animal awareness agencies know that I'm involved, so I'm always getting asked to do things, and I love it. It's a wonderful privilege to be asked.
Do you feel it's your way of being able to give back in a different dimension?
Yes, and it's not like completely altruistic, because in that true sense, because I get a lot back from it. I love being around animals, and if I could have a farm full of donkeys and goats and everything, so it doesn't take a lot of my energy. I don't feel like, oh gosh, I've got to go to the SPCA today and raise. I do fun projects, and I'm good friends with people in industry that really want to help me. So if it's like Science Diet or whatever, and they want to donate to SPCA, then I'm there to do the handover. And so it's projects that I really enjoy. So I get energy from them. So I should be thanking them, because I feel, wow, if I wasn't, I'd be missing out. It's such a high, and you don't have to be somebody that's well known. If you just do something for somebody else, it's a lovely high. It's why Christmas time, you prefer seeing the person's face that's opening your gift than getting your own gifts. It's that same
creating joy.
Creating joy, that's it.
And beyond looking after and going forwards and doing causes, social causes, like the ambassadorship for the SPCA, and turning more towards the day-to-day work, can you share some of the milestones that you want to accomplish going forwards in your career, and what we can expect from you in the near future?
Well, we didn't mention the fact that I've got a jewelry line, Louise Carver Collection, which is really doing nicely now. I'm wearing some of it, but you can't see, so I'm sorry about that.
We'll put a picture up on Twitter.
And I'm really enjoying that other creative side of myself. And so I'd like that to grow and to maybe take it into other places in Africa. It's a really beautiful range. I love doing it, and I use a South African all-woman team in Cape Town. And so it's really fun working with women. I enjoy it, because I've always worked with men my entire life in the music industry. I'm also releasing several projects overseas. Today is actually the release date of a massive dance project I signed to a record label called Mixmash in Amsterdam.
Congratulations.
Thanks. And so it was played at Tomorrowland, which is 180,000 people in Belgium. It's the biggest dance festival in the world. So they launched it with a top DJ called Laidback Luke. And I have a contract in Russia I've signed to a Russian record label there. So I do a lot of strangely dance music that is quite 2 o'clock in the morning kind of dance music, and I enjoy it because it's so different to what I do here. So that is doing very nicely for me there. And then in this country, I'm still releasing singles off my previous album, Say It to My Face, which is a very strong album. So we're releasing 400 Miles as the current single. And so we'll release more singles off there. I'm in a very good place. I'm really enjoying things a lot more than I used to. I used to be so hard on myself. I still am, but I'm learning some new tricks now to start to enjoy what I've achieved. I still don't think it's nearly enough. And I still think I'm just a baby, like, in this game, even though I've been in it since I was 15 and I'm in my 30s. But there's so much to do. And I think the only message I can really leave as creative people and to say something of meaning is you never know where your life's going to take you. And you never know where what you create ends up. I've done a track when I was 22 in London, and it was something I wrote when I was on the tube, taking a tube home. I wrote it. It was a number one all over Europe. And whilst I was working on my pop music in South Africa, I had no idea what was happening to that song. And I think that's what we as controlling creative people think, like, what you think you can control, you have no idea. You have no control over what you do once it's left you as a piece of art. You don't know where it's going to end up. And I think that's the exciting thing. And it's going to always be exciting for me.
And in closing today, can you please share a few words of wisdom that you would like to pass on to young girls in Africa that are listening to the show?
Well, I hope that you enjoy the moment more. I am still learning that. I'm very competitive, and that's a good thing. But sit back and pat yourself on the back a lot more. And keep your girl friendships. That's very important. And laugh as much as possible. And be a good person. And follow what you're good at, because don't swim up the waterfall. Rather go with the flow. And if it's not working like you want it to work, then think again, because it shouldn't be that difficult. And I've learnt that in music. When I'm working so hard on something, it's often I'm not going in the right direction with it. And to just take a break and relook at it, and when it's right, it flows quite organically and quite naturally. So, but the main thing is just love yourself and value yourself, and don't be too hard on yourself.
Thank you for those words of inspiration. It's been a pleasure having you on the show today. To all our listeners, you have been listening to Louise Carver, renowned South African singer and songwriter, and I should say internationally renowned South African singer and songwriter, on Womanity, Woman in Unity. We'd love to hear more from you in the future on your pending developments.
Thank you very much. It was really lovely to have this time.
Today we play out with Warrior by Louise Carver. Join us next week to listen to Penny Haynes, renowned South African Olympic gold medalist.
ngihlala kunomkhondo kunzima don't stick around you a warrior's power comes within amandla kunomhlaba iyahlala ngeke ingafifile put love in your heart the universe will play its part the first floor will take more chicky sondo just take it yes come on me put in this yo then the second kuzolungela
put your weapons down victory is mine